Welcome to this special edition of the Huffites Institute's weekly audio podcast. You're hearing an audio-only portion from the Huffites Discussion. The Huffites Discussion is where we bring leaders in sports medicine and human performance together, give them the microphone for 15 minutes, and have them tell us their big ideas. As I said, you're listening to the audio-only portion. You can go to the website for the Huffites Institute at huffitesinstitute.org and get the full video and check out the speakers' bios. We'll be putting a new one up every 2 weeks. So thank you for downloading us, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy. Our speaker this week is Dr. Dennis Bramble, an emeritus professor of biology from the University of Utah. Dr. Bramble's research has dealt primarily with the problem of running and its influence on human origins and evolution. His talk this week is entitled, Can Grandma Run? An Evolutionary Perspective on Human Exercise, Aging, and Endurance Performance.
Thank you. Well, I know my accent was going to give me away as a pretender here, but howdy.
Howdy.
Hey, that's the first time you've heard that from a Ute fan, I'm sure, right? One way or another, I think exercise has worked its way into nearly all the talks that you've heard so far, and so I basically want to sort of play off of that and talk about the role of exercise and how it's played out over a much longer time span than I think most of the people who work in this great field of exercise and sports science are used to thinking about. And so I want to give you a little overview and raise some questions, things that I'm still struggling with right now. But I think they're interesting, and hopefully you will too. So, just a bit of background here. A few years back, Dan Lieberman, who's a really super physical anthropologist at Harvard University, and I teamed up to publish a paper which came out on the cover of Nature, and what we proposed was a fairly radical notion. I think some people thought at the time almost an absurd notion. And that is that not only are humans great at endurance exercise, but in fact, the whole business of structural and physiological specialization for endurance running was actually a key ingredient in the origin of our whole group of primates, things that we call humans. And we did that by basically looking at a whole bunch of things, and I won't go into the details here, but the anatomy of the body, biomechanics of walking and running, the energetics of those activities, and then taking all that information back to the fossil record and seeing what that actually said. And what it said was, we think quite clearly, and this idea has, I think, gained a fair amount of traction since this paper, is that in fact the origin of humans is probably tied to endurance exercise and most specifically to long distance running. And you know, I've published papers, good ones I think actually, I'm a little biased on this, on turtles and jackrabbits and things like that, and I have to say they never played in the public at all until we got into the human business, and we got lots of press. We were got coverage on the front cover of the New York Times and lots of magazines and so forth. And then even more recently, Chris McDougall's book came out and actually picked up on some of our work too. And you can see, in fact, that the title of his book bears a striking resemblance to the title on our Nature cover. That Nature cover was interesting because everybody tries to get a cover on Nature, and so it's really quite a competition. And I have to say that Dan Lieberman, my co-author, was really instrumental in putting together the concept of this thing. This funky guy running nude with a fez on, and I don't know why, and neither does he. This is actually part of the classic early studies of animal locomotion by a guy by the name of Edward Muybridge. And he did this before there were motion picture cameras. So, in fact, this guy is a series of snap photographs taken of a guy running through tripwires with a bunch of still cameras. And when I showed my wife, actually, the mock-up of this that we were going to send in, she said, oh, that's great. but you know, they're never going to publish that. And I said, why not? And she said, well, look, that guy's penis is flopping up and down. And I said, yeah, that's right, but that's a plus, because we're talking about the mechanics here, and that actually is reflective of the dynamic loading of running, right? And that's important. And she said, hey, they're not going to publish that, right? And I said, look, this is going to Nature, which is a European, not an American journal. These guys are mature and grown up. And so we sent it in, and sure enough, they published it. And when I got the thing and I opened it up, I looked at it and I said, damn, she was right. They airbrushed off his accelerometer. And they never said a word about it, actually. So I want to just touch briefly on some questions here, which are, I think, ultimately related to human history here. One is why we live so long. The other is, what is this connection between endurance activity and longevity? A little diversion into some animals that might give us some insight into why we have some of these peculiar things in people. And then finally, just a couple of comments about what I hope all this will show us. People, in fact, do live a long time. So I'm not talking here about average lifespan, which has gone up consistently, particularly in developed countries over the last century or so. But I'm talking about maximum potential lifespan, which is really how long the machinery is biologically built to last. And this, there's a good relationship between body mass and expected lifespan in mammals, and that's that blue curve. But as you can see, humans are way out of range, way out of range. We should have lifespans based on our body size and so forth of, say, 30, 35 years or something like that. And potentially people can live into their early 90s. And then you see way up at the other top there, elephants, which are actually also a little above the line and have a lifespan second only to humans. And so we'll come back to that. So this long lifespan raises a particularly interesting problem that a number of people have. Whoops, I'm losing things here. And I'll have to hold this in my hand. Interesting problem, and that is it's a rule in animals that after they've done reproducing, they usually die. And humans have, females at least, this really long post-reproductive survival. Postmenopausal survival. And the question is, why do we have that? And our closest relatives, in fact, don't have much of a postmenopausal survival, and their upper age span is usually in the around 40 or so. So humans have huge lifespans, and they also have, at least in females, post-reproductive survival. A good friend and colleague at the University of Utah has published one of the most plausible ideas, explanations, if you will, for the evolution of post-reproductive survival and long lifespans in humans. It's called the grandmother hypothesis. And the basic idea is that your fitness, from an evolutionary perspective, is how many genes you can live behind. So if you do a good job of protecting your children and you have lots of them and so forth, your fitness is going to be high. But you can also extend your fitness if you protect the second generation, your grandchildren. And so the idea, and she's worked here with the Hadza, one of the last of the hunter-gatherer tribes in East Africa, and has shown that grandmothers, in fact, grandmothering, contribute significantly to the survival of that their grandchildren, and hence their genes. I like this idea a lot, but what bothers me as an older gentleman now, and now a grandfather, is that I have no role in this at all. And so where do the guys fit in? And so I started thinking about this a while back when I started looking at some data on age and age group performance in a major marathon. This is the New York City Marathon. Terrific, terrific marathon. Tons of data. Best runners in the world in many cases, and published, so you can get at it. And what this shows basically is that performance increases rapidly until the late 20s and early 30s in both sexes, and then starts to drop. And it's that. And what amazed me here was that people in their mid 60s performed at the same level as say 19-year-olds in this thing. And you can combine both of those sexes, and what you get is what I call this age-extended performance curve, which is a really regular, a 1% decline per year in endurance performance over a long span of time, say 30 years or more. And this is the most recent marathon. I'm just showing the male data here, but it's basically the same thing. 64-year-olds are competing at the same level in this endurance exercise as college freshmen. And I thought, this is an interesting thing. And so what could this mean? Most of the evidence that we have nowadays suggests that the origin of humans and the origin of endurance exercise, and particularly endurance running, is closely connected to a major shift, evolutionary shift, in the kinds of habitats that these primates were occupying. Basically, the shift from forest and woodland to open habitats like savannas. And those savanna habitats are different in the sense that they have very widely scattered resources, they have very large territories, the animals that live there, and people usually have nomadic lifestyles. There's greater access to fresh meat, but as I showed at the bottom here, most of that fresh meat is tied up with big carnivores. And then finally, it's a rigorous climate. So I want to suggest here a non-human model that I think actually might provide some insight into long lifespans and what this means. These are elephants. And you might think that's a weird sort of place to think about humans at first, but I'm going to suggest it's not, because there are lots and lots of parallels. First and foremost, elephants are actually savanna inhabitors and involved side by side with humans in the same places at the same time. They have very long lifespans, second only to humans. They're extremely intelligent, although it's hard to measure intelligence, as everybody knows. They live in small extended family groups. And that's exactly the way the hunter-gatherer tribes do. They move widely over large territories and frequently, and they possess excellent long-term memory. So there's this saying, elephants never forget. It's not quite as simple as that, but in fact, there's an awful lot of truth in that. This is something you'll know about in this state, the hardships that come with drought. But humans evolved in a part of the world that's subject to frequent severe droughts. The one that they're engaged in now is the worst in the last 50 to 60 years. And this has devastating consequences for either animals or humans that are closely tied to the land, which is in fact the history of humans up until very, very recently. So what is it that elephants do? Well, they have this long lifespan. They have excellent long-term memories. They have strong, persistent family ties, and they're led by the oldest female. So the males get actually sensibly, I think, they get kicked out fairly early on. This is a matriarchal society. But there have been a number of studies in recent years that have showed that survivorship of these severe natural hardships, especially drought, depend upon the memory of an old female. So a number of studies have compared then the survivorship of the young, and it's the young that are really vulnerable, just as they are in humans. And so in one study, they had three groups of elephants in which the females were around 40 years old. And one of those, the poachers had killed the oldest female. So drought came. All three groups had to decide what to do. The two with the oldest females moved out of this big game preserve, which they rarely ever did, and found residual water resources, and most of their young survived. The ones that had lost their matriarch and had only a younger female, who was not old enough to have lived through the preceding severe drought, most of the young died in that. And they were pretty confident that, in fact, those older females remembered that past drought and went back to places where they could remember that resources persisted even under really harsh conditions. So the same thing, I think, has probably been true in humans. If you have infrequent, harsh events, the older individuals are the ones who retain the memory and the ones who then, the survival of the group, and if they're closely related, their genes, will depend upon. So why did humans begin to run? Only one of the possibilities, and I think it's one of the stronger possibilities, is that they basically increased meat, but they pirated most of that meat. That is, they didn't actually hunt things down, but they actually ran out. And if you can get out there fast enough and chase off the predators, you can get huge quantities of fresh meat fairly easily. But it's a high-risk business. As you can imagine, it's a high-risk business. So you want to have experienced individuals along who recognize a badass lion that is not going to be intimidated over ones that are wimps, right? And only the older individuals are going to do this. Finally, I want to tie this to one other thing, a physiological peculiarity of people. And that is, if you look at the way the energetics of locomotion progresses from walking through trotting through galloping, in all quadrupedal mammals there are these U-shaped curves. And they are optimal only at a short span of speed, sort of at the bottom of those curves. So they have to jump from one to the other, and they can't run in between without losing a lot of energy. They have to be quite selective. In humans, you have that same U-shaped curve in walking, but once you begin to run, you have this amazing thing. And that is it's like gas mileage doesn't matter anymore. You can speed up, slow down, and so forth, and it costs you the same. It doesn't matter. So they have huge flexibility that way. And what could that mean? Well, what I think it could mean is, in fact, group running. So I'm going to suggest here that if you had older individuals who are usually going to be slower, even if they're in great shape, and you have other people who are younger but don't have as much knowledge, and you want to go out and do something important, you actually have to have the older people along. And you can slow down, and that the younger people can slow down and include that older person, and there's not much metabolic cost involved in doing that kind of thing. So it's a great system, and people are really quite unique in this way. If you try to do this with walking, with that U-shaped curve, and some of you will know this, it's incredibly frustrating to try to walk with the wrong person. As soon as you begin to run, people can be hugely different in body size and age and everything else, and they run comfortably together. It's a huge difference here. So, final thing I would just say, in a way it's to emphasize or re-emphasize everything that's come in these other talks, is that the history of humans is hugely tied to exercise. Hugely tied to exercise. Two things characterize human success, I would say. One is smarts, and one is the ability to engage in sustained endurance exercise. And those two things worked hand in hand for a very long period of time. Recently, you've started to have this conflict between the two, because the smarts has led to iPads and the internet and iPhones and television and all the rest, right? So we're getting into a situation here where maximum potential lifespan has not changed. Medical technology is pushing people more and more up towards that limit, and yet they're in worse and worse shape, which is a huge, huge, huge scary thing for healthcare and everything else. And so the final thing I would mention here is that in this model that I've been talking about, if you think about it a little bit, it may explain one of the really weird paradoxes, because one of the things that's been increasing in modern human populations is dementia. But historically, if we're right about this, what's most important are the early memories. It's the early ones. And so you get this paradox where a person who's starting to early stages of Alzheimer's can't remember what happened yesterday. And yet they can give you a clear description of important things in their lives that happened 4 and 5 and 6 decades earlier. Those are actually the important memories, historically, in an evolutionary sense. Anyway, I'm hoping that the takeaway message might be here that exercise is extraordinarily important. A lot of the really unique things about human beings are owed to a long history of sort of an exercise machine. And hopefully, if we could get a little better sense of that and incorporate it into our modern lives, then we'd have a better road ahead of us going forward. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Dr. Bramble. You can't leave the circle yet.
Okay. If you say so.
I'm juggling things, so, and he's walking away from me. We've got a great question here from Steve G. Have you found any correlation with human evolution and dog evolution as running animals, specifically with the endurance of dogs in colder environments?
I haven't. I mean, I was mesmerized by the earlier talk on the Iditarod dogs, but actually the answer is no, I haven't.
It'd be a fascinating correlation, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah. I'm impressed with those dogs, for sure.
Yeah.
Although I will say that you can run a dog right into the ground easily. And I bet I could run one of those Iditarod dogs, if I could get them out in the heat and run them out in the desert for just a little while, it would bake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have another question here. Are there not just less 19-year-olds competing at the marathon distance Wouldn't a well-trained 19-year-old far outcompete the well-trained 60-year-old?
There are, I think if I remember the data correctly, there are more, and the age group is like 60 to 64. There are more of those than there are the 18 and 19-year-olds. But the 18 and 19-year-olds have come up substantially from that 2004 to the 2007. Some of that in these earlier age groups is the incorporation or the opportunity for a lot of the younger African runners to get involved in this marathon that weren't there before. But even when you sort of jack up the performance of the 18 and 19-year-olds and you look across, they're still the same as the 64s. So, you know, I don't have a clear answer to that question, but I don't think it's that. I think actually that as you drop below about 20, this ability for that sort of sustained long-distance exercise just plummets. And it would be interesting to know how much of that is physiological and how much of it is mental.
We have to ask Jacques about the mental stuff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
One last question from David E. He asked, have some of the things that you've attributed to running, could they be attributed just to long-distance walking that the gatherers did?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we take this up specifically in this science paper. The problem is, and I'll just give you one simple example, you have great springs that all running mammals have built in your Achilles tendons and then the spring ligaments underneath your arches. That stuff plays no significant mechanical role in the springiness and energy storage and retrieval system that you find in walking. So you can walk at any speed and it's not engaged. You really have to run and just even slow jogging, it starts to work. So there are lots and lots of things in the human body that don't seem to be explicable in terms of evolution of walking.
Excellent. Thank you, Dr. Bramble, for being with us today.
We want to thank you for downloading us and listening. And remember that you can go to our website at huffeinsinstitute.org to download the full video podcast of all of these talks. We want to remind you that our institute and these podcasts are supported by the Huffines family and the Omar Smith family. We hope that you have an active and healthy week.